You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Three Palestinian members of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade were killed in an explosion in northern Gaza Saturday night. Initial reports said that an Israeli tank fired a missile at them as they attempted to plant a landmine nearby Israeli troops, though Israeli military sources later denied that account, saying instead that the Palestinians were killed when the landmine exploded prematurely. Also over the weekend, Israeli security forces shot and killed top Hamas leader Abdullah Qawwasmi in the West Bank town of Hebron. Speaking in Jordan over the weekend, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell said that he regretted Israel's attacks, which he said came at a delicate point in the Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations. Peace Watch spoke earlier today with Mustafa Barghouti, Palestinian leader of the National Political Initiative, and we asked him for his reaction to Powell's comments.
I'm surprised not about the fact that Mr. Colin Powell said so, but I'm surprised that he didn't say so for such a long time. And the fact is that Israel has been assassinating Palestinians for the last 3 weeks, obviously trying to undermine completely any potential for the implementation of the roadmap. I'm also surprised that there is no statement from the side of the United States that criticizes Israel for failing to abide by the fact that it should freeze all settlement activities in accordance to the roadmap. On the contrary, yesterday Israel announced that it's going to have new settlement plans and a big new settlement project around Jerusalem. And today Mr. Sharon declared that Israel must continue its settlement activities, but quietly. What that means is that Israel is not really accepting the roadmap, and Israel is not really implementing the roadmap. That is the reality, and unfortunately nothing is said about this particular fact.
Well, with President Bush talking about moving into Gaza to help Israel in the fight against Hamas, can you, Dr. Barghouti, help us to understand more about the organization Hamas, which we also know from reports that Hamas has a humanitarian side to its mission?
Hamas is a mixture of a political, social, and military movement, you can say. In 1984-85, Israel encouraged Hamas to grow and spread when Israel was fighting the PLO. At that time, Israel considers that the growth of Hamas will weaken the Palestinian side by creating an internal conflict. So much of what's happening now is the responsibility of Israel at that time. Anyhow, Hamas is there. It has some support. But in our opinion, the solution to the problem of violence in this region is through the declaration of immediate ceasefire, but from both sides, and then stepping up the peace process in the right direction, where it would be obvious that occupation would be ended and assassination activities would be ended and Israeli attacks would also be ended. What Israel wants is unilateral ceasefire. They want all the Palestinian groups to stop fighting while Israel continues their attack, continue its attacks on various Palestinian locations. This does not make sense. And in my opinion, I'm not really sure that Sharon wants really a ceasefire. Each time we come close to convincing all the groups to ceasefire, Sharon does one or another or two assassinations. And if that doesn't help, he makes a third assassination to make sure that he gets a reaction, a response, and then claim that Palestinians are responsible for not having ceasefire.
What is
at stake here is actually the possibility of having peace or not having peace. In my opinion, there isn't enough pressure from the international community to make Israel accept the principle of peace, which means ending occupation and violence.
Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon faced harsh criticism from several members of the Likud party several weeks ago by voicing support for the Middle East peace effort. He said, quote, ruling 3.5 million Palestinians cannot go on indefinitely, unquote. Then last week, Israeli soldiers began for the first time to dismantle an inhabited Jewish outpost in the West Bank town of Mitzpah Yitzhar. The outpost consisted of only about 10 people living in tents, but still, some might characterize it as a symbolic beginning to what's sure to be a long and difficult process. What do you make of these recent Israeli statements calling for peace, and how genuine do you think they are?
This is nothing. It's pure nothing. It's pure propaganda. What Sharon did is dismantle some spots, remove some caravans that are not inhabited. But he's keeping on the ground 102 new settlements that were built since Oslo. Most of them were built by him personally. He's keeping on the ground more than 240 settlements that are all illegal. There isn't anything called legal and illegal settlements, because all the settlements are illegal according to international law. They're based on theft, appropriation of Palestinian land illegally, building Israeli buildings on occupied Palestinian territories according to the international law. And we all know since 1993 that the continuation of settlement activities was the major obstacle of reaching peace, and it continues to be so. So I think that Mr. Sharon is simply playing a propaganda game when he says it's not good to rule 3.5 million Palestinians. That's fine. Then why doesn't he end occupation? He doesn't want to end occupation. He wants to continue to control the land on which Palestinians live, but get rid of the responsibility for their social and daily life. And that means what Sharon is doing by building this new Berlin Wall around the Palestinian cities and villages, by depriving the villages and cities from their land, from their water, from their natural resources, he's building a ghetto, specifically a ghetto. He's isolating Palestinians in separate ghettos, some ghettos in the north, some ghettos in the south, and transforming the whole West Bank and Gaza into prisons. This way, he's not going to rule the Palestinians inside the ghettos, because he wants a Palestinian police to take that responsibility. But basically, this is his solution to continuation of occupation, continuation of controlling the Palestinian land, without allowing a true and independent sovereign Palestinian state to appear. In my opinion, this is pure propaganda.
Mustafa Barghouti is the Palestinian leader of the National Political Initiative and the director of the Village Medical Relief Committee. He spoke with Peace Watch earlier this afternoon. A provision in the No Child Left Behind Act forcing schools that receive federal funds to pass over confidential student information to the military and increasing funds to school-based junior ROTC programs are just two of the aggressive tactics the U.S. military has used recently to get more and more young people to join the armed services. Every day, more than 3,000 military recruiters go to high schools across the United States. They attend school baseball games, show off Army Humvees, and set up simulated war video games. As Peace Watch correspondent Ingrid Drake reports, there's no system in place to safeguard students from abuses by recruiters.
On August 21st of this year, Marine Corps recruiter Sergeant Sean Potwin will face charges in a civil court for committing assault and a sex offense against a 17-year-old high school student. Potwin was known at the five schools in Howard County, Maryland, where he recruited, as passionate about his work. Similar to other recruiters, he had embedded himself in the school, serving as a consultant for a student theater production and chaperoning a school dance. According to a military spokesperson, Potwin had no formal restrictions on his work within the high schools, except those that may have been imposed by the school itself. It was not rare for him to be alone with students off campus in a military vehicle. This case does not surprise peace activists who have been working against military recruiters in the schools for years. Glenn Milner is a peace activist and father of three who has done counter-recruitment in the high schools of suburban Seattle. Milner describes a series of abuses by recruiters at his children's school that began in 1998.
This one male recruiter picked up the female student and drove her around and then sexually assaulted her in a park. The family called the Army, and they didn't do anything. They first said they were going to, but they didn't do anything. And finally what the family did is they went to the King County Sheriff's Office. The sheriff arrested the recruiter. And then the Army came back and said, well, we'll take over the case, which they did. They ended up court-martialing him. Through the Freedom of Information Act, I was able to get their Army documents on this guy. I haven't gotten the court-martial record since 99. And actually, this one congressman in my area has made numerous inquiries. I'm expecting to actually get him any time. And part of the reason why I'm still trying to get him, because I told the family that I would. But what happened was, because the Army court-martialing the recruiter, he King County lost jurisdiction over the case because of, you can't try someone twice for the same crime. What in the end happened was they shipped the guy to another state. He got a promotion, not because of what he did, but he was up for one anyway and got it. The weird thing about it was I asked the Army for the records of the investigation, and it turned out that the commander of the recruiting station had an affair with a female student at Shorecrest also, but they never did anything about it. And the guy that did an investigation by the Army said that neither one of them were fit to do recruiting, and said the commander shouldn't be in that position. And then about a year later, a third recruiter asked to have sex with another female student, and at that point then Shoreline School District banned the Army for a year. But the school district, they try and avoid any controversial subjects, so they a year later they let them back in. Now I'm told any time they try to restrict the military in terms of recruitment, they got a lot of phone calls from veterans or from people who at least supported the military. And then there was another incident where a female recruiter that had a weekend retreat in Olympia, Washington. Some of the male recruiters actually sexually assaulted a female recruiter. And this is the same group, you know, it's just this ongoing problem.
It is not clear how many military recruiters have been charged with abuse by students. According to Major Kim Miller, Director of Public Affairs for the Western Recruiting Region, the military does not track investigations into recruiter misconduct.
Investigations are conducted at different levels, and there are different types of investigations. So as a whole, those are not tracked.
Because the records aren't kept, is there any way you could estimate how many charges are filed through your office or how many investigations are conducted through your branch each year?
I don't think that's... I'm at the Public Affairs office, so I'm not exactly...
Right.
I think your question isn't... I'm not sure what your question is.
Recruiters are Defense Department employees who have gone through the military's sexual harassment and equal opportunity training. To be recruiters, they must complete 6 weeks of training in marketing and professional selling skills. As confirmed by Major Griesmer, spokesman for the National Recruiting Command, recruiters are not given special training on sexual harassment and the sensitive issues of working with young people under age 18. John Judge, who has been doing counter-military recruitment since the Vietnam War, explains current efforts to limit recruiter access to students.
There is now a movement that's sprung up, especially in the wake of the move to go into Iraq and the new Gulf War, among youth themselves to do anti-military and anti-war work. And so a lot of these young people are participating. There are student groups that have sprung up. There was an active student movement here in D.C., hundreds of students that walked out of schools at different points. And they're also interested in talking to their peers about these recruitment issues and getting the word out. So we have a campaign called Students Not Soldiers here in D.C. with American Friends Service Committee, the Washington Peace Center, and Choices work together, both to try to counter junior ROTC in the schools and get it defunded, but also to try to address the No Child Left Behind Act. But there is an option in that act that students and parents can opt out, but they're not being told about it. So we've had an active campaign to tell students about it, to give them cards to sign saying they don't want their name given to the recruiters, turning those into the school board and the system, working with the school board, who have actually been quite cooperative here in D.C., and also with the school administration, to get letters out to parents that would allow them to say, I don't want my child's information released.
This coming weekend at the Stopping War Where It Begins conference in Philadelphia, D.C. students will join with activists from across the country to organize against militarism in the schools. For Peace Watch, this is Ingrid Drake reporting in Washington, D.C.
Domestic politics were on the agenda at the PEER conference. Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, or PEER, held a conference recently in Washington, D.C. to celebrate its 10th anniversary. One of the keynote speakers was radio personality Carolyn Casey, who examined the political climate in the U.S. today.
So here we are gathered in Washington, D.C. Thank you for outsiders to come share our spiritual hardship post with us. We are in, it's also known as Mordor, where even now, right now, we are inching the ring of power into the crack of doom. And many people may know that District of Columbia is a perfect anagram using every letter only once for I toil bad cosmic turf. So, So from many traditions, I study traditions, and I'm devoted to the wedding of spiritual magic and ingenious social action as the unbeatable combination. Because we say, this situation is so dire, we can't afford the luxury of realism. So I have, in mythic news in five minutes, many gifts for you from all over the place. But one, I live with an actual coyote, I mean a real one, and so she sends her regards to fellow tricksters. And traditional opening is, we know that the crossroads, in the history of divination, the crossroads is considered the point of greatest freedom. And to be honored with this is coyote hair mixed with tobacco for all of us. We say, open our path before us, O spirit of compassionate trickster, that we may be of maximum good in the world. May it be so. This June that we are embarked on now is the 30th anniversary of Watergate. It's also the astrological anniversary of Watergate, when Saturn, which is authority, which we're meant to claim, but when we give it away, it's tyranny. And Saturn will be closest to the sun this month than it has been since June of 1973, when the Watergate burglary happened. And a friend of mine who pointed this out said, ah, tyranny cannot stand illumination. So the gods are with us. There's another wonderful word that a Brazilian friend gave to me. It's called jetino, and it means the powerful magic that comes in dangerous times. And we know that in all mythic folklore, trickster, against all odds, are the odds that trickster likes. Helen Keller said, this is a time for a loud voice, open speech, and fearless thinking. I rejoice that I live in such splendidly disturbing times. Well, imagine how thrilled she'd be right now, you know. So the first present I have from you, I associate with indigenous people all over the world, and they remind us that we are all recovering indigenous-souled people. We all have kinship with the earth, and we have to dress it up if we're noble enough to work in, you know, undercover agents and agencies and disguise it in scientific language. But we really feel kinship. And so the first gift, the Sangomas in South Africa that I cavort with, gave me several presents for you tonight. They said, if you meet with good-hearted people devoted to the greater good, then you may share these things. And it's called Muti. Muti in South African means power and medicine. Their understanding of power, power is only that which heals. Control and force are the toxic mimic of power. So the first Muti they send is called Umpepu. So I share it with you. And Umpepu summons all ancestors who have ever been devoted to similar good works of revelation of truth that one has been oneself. So we go, okay, come in Tom Paine, come in all those who have been devoted to democracy, come in now, according to the Sangomas. And also one of my favorites also too, many of you may not know, but the great voodoo queen Marie Laveau, of whom it was written, Marie Laveau did not create a social movement. And again, we're not creating something, we're part of the largest global democracy movement ever. We are kinned across borders. And it was written about her, she did not create a social movement, but a woman of her substance understood what was at stake. She saw a role to be played and played it to the hilt, helping to coalesce a scattered and oppressed people into a dynamic culture. It was a moment of cultural ecstasy. So again, for each one of us, we see a role to be played and we play it to the hilt. Now, so we say truths are terrible often now, but their revelation is great. Tyranny is terrible, but its revelation is democracy. Now, you know, the investigative mind means also investigating language and a wonderful, you know, looking underneath language. The word obscene comes from Greek tragedy and drama, and it means off stage. When Medea murders her children, it is obscene. It is not shown, it is off stage. So we're here to eliminate obscene and bring everything on stage, reminding ourselves that the trickster's strategy says there are no two opposing sides. Only those ardently devoted to a dynamic peace of cavorting collaboration, and those who are not yet devoted to that. The compassionate trickster available, invoked now, is willing to grant anything that we want, and we might say irresistible eloquence in the service of democracy. I like to go through the newspaper and go, let's replace words, like predictable words like environmentalist, with sane, reverent people. Sane, reverent people had this to say. We know that the end of terrorism is simple. It means a wonderful life for all children. Terrorism is over. So we want to extend and create that vision and the music and art to bring it alive. But the last gift from the Sangomas to each one of us goes something like this. Another kind of Muti they have is called truth-revealing Muti. And they gave this to me when I was in Cape Town. And because I live in Washington, D.C., I ran out. And so they shipped some to friends of mine. I was doing a fundraiser in Sebastopol, and it came in a little leather pouch, and I really wanted it, but I decided to leave it behind. And then they wrote me, and they said, it's too powerful, you know, too much truth is coming out, can we send it to you? And I said, yes, absolutely. So they sent it to me in this beautiful little Impala pouch, and I tucked it away, and as I mentioned, I live with an actual coyote, and one day I saw the coyote frisking with something in the yard, and it's like, oh no, the coyote is tearing apart the too dangerous for Sonoma County truth-revealing Muti. And at that point, a friend of mine who, like many of us here, is an undercover agent, he pretends to think that George Bush is okay in order to have access. And he said, I have unusual access at the Gridiron Dinner. I know that words won't help. Do you have something that might? And I say, yes, I do. Actually, I have the truth-revealing Muti too strong for Sonoma County tossed by a coyote. Come on over. And so we dusted him, you know, and I said, are you going to get to shake George Bush's hand? And he said, I have no idea. So anyway, we sent him off with the Muti and some for his hands just in case, and because it spreads everywhere. And he said, he gave me the report, and he said, Venus is rising. This was good. He said it was very scary. The temperature dropped in the room 20 degrees when the Cheneys walked in, like, You know, same with Gail Norton. And he said he talked to Bush, you know, okay. And then they all went, okay, entourage. And in the threshold, which is very important mythologically, in the doorway, George Bush, with all his Secret Service, turned back into the room, marched back up to my friend with his hand outstretched, and said, let me shake your hand, thus transferring the truth-revealing Muti to the White House, which is where it is now. So I want to share it with you. It's too dangerous for Sonoma County, but it's just right for all of you here. And so by the miracle of molecular dispersion, I'm going to not deputize you, but compassionate tricksterize you. And if you accept, I'll blow it out, and it will reach all of you. And it means that wherever you go, even effortlessly, truth will be revealed, truth in the service of democracy. And if you accept that, then you just say, this is another gift from the Yoruba people of Nigeria, Ashe, which is may it be so. So we go, thank you for doing this good work.
Carolyn Casey, political activist and radio personality, speaking at a conference for public employees for environmental responsibility, or PEER, in Washington. Earlier this year, the Bush administration released information about one of their latest tools for identifying potential terrorists. In this political satire, the Christmas coup comedy players take on this latest weapon against terrorism.
The Pentagon is developing a radar-based device that it can identify people by the way they walk for use in a new anti-terrorist surveillance system. The agency is called Total Information Awareness. Conceived and managed by retired Admiral John Poindexter, the TIA surveillance system is based on the theory that, quote, terrorists must engage in certain transactions to coordinate and conduct attacks against Americans, and these transactions form patterns that may be detectable.
Okay, you, that's right, you. Get over there against the wall, hands above your head. You're under arrest.
What's the charge, officer?
The charge? We picked you up on our new anti-terrorist radar. You walk like a terrorist. I said, hands over your head.
Don't let this chokehold happen to you. Come on down to the Modern School of Walking Right and learn how to eliminate your terrorist gait. One introductory course and you'll never be picked up on Department of Defense radar because of the way you sashay. At the Modern School, you can learn how to walk white and walk right. You'll learn how to walk like a Yale rich boy, walk like an Upper East Side matron, walk like the Secretary of the Treasury.
Listen to the success stories of some graduates of the Modern School.
I am a cab driver, and the last time I take a break and leave the car for a drink of water, the feds locked me up for 8 months. No lawyer. All they say is, ha ha ha, we got one. He walk funny. When I get out, I go to the school, and now I walk free and easy, real nice. I even take my wife and kids to the Statue of Liberty. Thank you, Modern School.
Hi, I'm Kukla. Every effing time I left the house going to a demonstration or just going to the store, the feds been tracking me. They told me I was going to end up in a tiger cage in Guantanamo. Can you believe they treat me like that just because of how I walk? I went down to the school, and now I could walk into the White House, and nobody does nothing. Thank you, Modern School.
Thousands of satisfied Americans have already taken our course. And you can look forward to a Fed-free existence because you and they are walking the modern way.
The Christmas Coup comedy players of Pacifica Station's KPFT of Houston and WBAI of New York. Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. Our producer is Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is T from the Pattersons taking the train to Tibet. Our associate producer is Angelique Shofar. We had production assistance from Jim Bennett of KPFA, Mohammed Owais, Jackson Allers, and Kata Mester. Thanks to Pete Caracas, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producers, Matt Bradley and Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at pacificaarchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support Peace Watch, we urge you to make a pledge through our secure online website at pacifica.org, or you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. You can send us your feedback to peacewatch@pacifica.org. You can also visit webactive.com to listen to archives of past Peace Watch programs. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.